Luke 9, verse 36. This is after they've had the experience with the cloud and him saying, this is God saying, this is my beloved son, hear him. And then 36, when the voice was passed, Jesus was found alone. And they kept it close and told no man in those days any of those things which they had seen. Now, kept it close is a... It's not a normal word that's used for this. It's a word that has with it it's sagao, and it means to hold one's peace or to conceal or to keep silence. But it's almost like you saw somebody murdered and you didn't tell anyone because they were feared. There was fear. And so if you notice, this is the first time Jesus didn't tell them to tell no man. Just because of the experience itself, there was a fear. So there was... Anyway, they told nobody. They kept it close.
He might have got locked up or something.
Huh?
They might have got locked up telling a story like that.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. What happened to Elijah and Moses? Jesus was found alone.
Well, they returned to glory.
What does that mean?
I mean, the vision was passed. It's so difficult for us to understand how these things could be because we think in linear time. And again, because of the importance of this, Jesus needed exhortation. And so God did this incredible thing. He took Moses, who had died, and Elijah, who had never died, and spake and talked of his decease, which he should accomplish. When Jesus was alone, they went back to where they were. Now, where is that? With Moses, it was in the New Jerusalem. More than likely, Elijah was there too, but he was there in a different form. Enoch and Elijah were the only two men that have never died in the Bible. Now, how can we understand that? We don't have any capacity to understand it. We don't have a capacity to understand, for me to answer the question, where did they go? There was a break in this membrane where Jesus was talking because he had fulfilled all things and he went to this place. Now, where was this place? It was probably what was called the second heaven. And there he spoke with Elijah and Moses. And then the cloud overshadowed them and he came back and... Jesus was alone. Jesus came back into time and space. Moses and Elijah went where they were before. It's the same thing in a way that happened in Pentecost. Let's just look at that for a minute. Go to Acts 2. When the day of Pentecost was fulfilled or fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. Now, remember, the 120 were with all accord in one place. They had, there was still a price on their head. They had to sort of mingle in with the crowd and not speak because everybody understood that they had a Galilean or Nazareth accent or Galilean accent. They didn't speak Hebrew right. So they were trying to hide out, but yet fulfill the need to be cleansed with the ashes of the red heifer. So they were hiding out. They were dispersed in the temple. When it was fully come, and suddenly there came from heaven, a sound from heaven as of a rushing mighty wind, and it filled all the house where they were sitting. And there appeared unto them cloven tongues like as of fire, and it sat upon each of them. So here, what's happened? What happened is this barrier between eternity and time and space was rent. And it was the sound, there was a sound of a mighty rushing wind, but no wind. And there was the appearance of fire, but no fire. Now the fire was what? The fire was the two cherubim and their sword, flaming swords that are protecting. So there was the sound of a mighty rushing wind, but no wind. There was the appearance of cloves of fire over each one of the 120. How can we possibly explain that? And about the same way we can explain what happened to Moses and Elijah. I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer.
But was Elijah walking around on the earth before or after this transfiguration?
No.
It's like a rip.
Hmm?
There's a rip in time.
And how long had Moses been dead before this? What was the time frame for that?
1,500
years. That's about a pretty long beard.
But again, in that place, there's no time. So there was no 1,500 years. It was the same instant.
It was interesting to recognize them. Guys,
well, again, Jesus had to know, and he's the only one that knew. Yeah, because Jesus told them. But they didn't know who he was, who they were.
I had a dumb question.
I probably have a dumb answer then.
Take risks in life. So. What better place? Thank
you. Minimum friends.
If there was no time, there was no time. I don't know, what would we do? What would we look like? What would it look like if there was no time?
We have invented, in English especially, a language for which it is impossible to describe the place of no time. And it's not very easy to describe in any language. But we have invented this idea that heaven is a place where you go and you see all your old friends and you see the people and you have little conversations, and the only thing I know from my own experience is that when you enter this place, and I've entered it three times, there's no more consciousness of self. There's no consciousness of anything else except being swallowed up with love and peace, but there's certainly no consciousness of self and no seeing of other people. It's a different place. Now, that's not the place that Jesus went. Jesus went to this. If you could conceive of this, there's time and space, and there's space without regard to time. And then there's eternity with no time or space. So those are the positional, that's what I believe anyway and teach. Now in time and space, we have the capacity to see and know people, and the fruit of the fall is manifest because everything is about self, self-realization. In space, without regard to time, there's still a capacity for individuality because it's, but you're not constrained by time. But when you go into time and space, when you leave time and space and go into eternity, then there's only love. There's only this mystery of being swallowed up, and there are no words for it. And that's why it's all in parables. But what happens is that people literalize the parable to make it understandable to them and come up with all kinds of silly. Well, I went to heaven and there I saw Jesus and he told me that I should come back and ask you to send me $158. No, he didn't. But it's just as goofy as some of the other things that people say about heaven. And you can't function.
Yeah, it just changes you. So that's, I believe, where, you know, we read about the kingdom of heaven is at hand, it's around you, if you're not there now, you know, we say all those things. But you log with it by faith alone.
Well, with me, it's a little more than faith.
I know, but not everybody.
Yeah. Or you make up things.
Yeah, you try and create a...
You create a reality that
your mind can...
Right.
With
and that's really what most theology is.
Yeah.
Anyhow,
always,
huh?
It's always concerned me. I didn't realize till this morning how... seeing how God guards that place to our, you know, advantage.
Well, again, I mean, that's why it says flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. The corruptible must be put on incorruption. Death is swallowed up in life. It's a world that has no words. And that's, you know, the three times that I visited eternity there's nothing in the universe that can compete with it. I remember this woman. I told you this before, but it seems appropriate to tell it again. I had the talk show and I was talking about this, and a woman called and said, "Well, that doesn't explain. What was it like, Owen?" I said, "Well, lady, have you ever had an orgasm?" And she sputtered around, and I said, "Well, I assume you have. Well, I want you to imagine that magnified 100,000 times. Then you'll have a taste of what this place of the New Jerusalem is about." Anyhow, how did we get on all that? Oh, it was Ronnie's fault. You asked a stupid question, and I gave you a stupid answer. So. All right, back to Luke. Everybody at least understand a little bit? Let's go back. Now, we got to understand one more. Let's go to Genesis 3. Verse 20, well, in 20. They just God had just described the effect of the curse on everybody. And then in verse 20, and Adam called his wife's name Eve, because she was the mother of all living. And unto Adam also, unto his wife, did the Lord make coats of skins and clothe them. And the Lord God said, Behold, the man is become as one of us, to know good and evil. And now, lest he put forth his hand, and take also of the tree of life, and eat, and live forever. And it's an unfinished sentence. And the reason it's unfinished is because that's what happened with the pre-Adamic age, the age of Lucifer. They ate both of the tree, of the fruit of the good and evil, and the tree of life. And that cannot be permitted to again ever happen. And so, again, read this again, but lest he put forth his hand and take also the tree of life and eat and live forever, and he couldn't, the rest of it wasn't even finished. What does that mean? Well, it means that the age of Lucifer would be duplicated. Therefore, the Lord God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubim and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. And that's the fire. When time was ripped, in Pentecost, that was the sound of mighty rushing wind, because there was no wind, but it sounded like it, and that sound filled the temple. And there was not fire, but the appearance of fire. Because it can't be permitted for that to enter, and it was like a foretaste for the 120 of the mystery of God and its completion.
I was just thinking about the tree of life and this place that you visit. There's no, this produces judgment and self stuff. But in heaven, this can't be there.
Can't. There's no flesh and blood. There's no self-realization. There's no self-understanding. Well, that's why people literalize everything, because we try and, we could spend all 100 years on this. Does that help any? Mr. Bojo? Mm-hmm. What? No more questions. Well, it's for the benefit of others, what you're going through, what you're going doing.
No. You can't make sense of things that don't make sense.
But do you understand in Genesis that incomplete sentence? Can you get a taste of that?
That just knocked me over. Yeah, that's big.
Right.
Yeah, I understand that.
And it's in the east of Eden. So that's why all of time is going through the New Jerusalem from west to east.
I just read an article yesterday that a woman wrote, actually a minister of some church in, I don't know, about the Garden of Eden, and about the difference between guilt and shame.
That's a biggie.
Some of the things are a little stretchy. I'm not so sure. It's okay. But it's a biggie. And that's what it all... there's millions of things flying around, but in a little cup on the bottom.
Guilt and shame.
That's what's in there.
And that's what that... Guilt is because you did something wrong, so I'm guilty because... But shame is something totally different. Shame is who you are. It's, and it's this toxic shame that everyone has tasted. But some people, it dominates. And it's just about any kind of little slight, and you feel like you need to crawl in a hole. You can't do anything about it. And that's why, and the culture has always tried to make guilt and shame the same thing. That's why sin and trespass isn't understood by Christians, because the sin offering is really the shame offering, and it's because it's self that dies. Trespass is, everybody understands trespass is you screw up and the blood of Christ cleanses you. But what do you do about shame? Some of us are better at hiding shame than others, so that it's hard to trigger it. But for some, just a glance or a word can put them into shame, and it becomes it's a place of no shame is the only human condition for which there is no facial expression. It's just, I remember when Gary was going through this, I mean, he was like a stone rock. It took all night.
You just said the blood of Christ cleanses you
from all guilt, from trespass.
What does that mean?
Well, again, that's one of the kinds of questions I was asking, what am I going to do in heaven? But the blood of Christ is, the life is in the blood. And so it cleanses you because you reckon that you for a moment have returned, you resurrected the evil one from the dead. And so the blood of Christ then, okay, that doesn't mean anything. The blood of Christ. Christ is my life. He's myself. So it cleanses you from all unrighteousness. But that doesn't do anything. Have anything to do with shame? Shame is something you have to die. You have to see your death. That's why all men died on the cross. But if you don't know that, huh?
Is shame linked to the sin offering?
Yes.
And guilt is linked to the trespass offering.
Right.
And in both cases, the blood covers so that God doesn't see the action any longer, and doesn't see you any longer.
Right. He only sees Christ.
Just like, in the door where it was like, oh, no, you don't need to come in here with the death angel. There's already been a death here. So, I mean, there's lots of things that can, also a death, the blood. And all.
Well, just stop a minute and think about that, what your son just said. When they were celebrating the first Passover, they did nothing inside. They just probably, were afraid and ate the stuff that they didn't understand it. It was the first time it ever happened. But all they did was the blood was outside the door, and they protected them because from God's standpoint, from the death angel's standpoint, everybody in the house was dead.
There's already been a death here, so.
And that's why it prefigured the mystery of Christ. But you can't understand the mystery of Christ until you have accepted your death. Otherwise, you'll try to make it, not the Holy Trinity. You'll make it the unholy quartet. What? You just seemed like a light bulb just went off.
It's like you said you can't understand it, but once you accepted death, there's no attempt to understand anything.
And then you're apprehended by it.
And then you're apprehended by it, which is revelation, which is obviously not from your little brain. It, God dumps it on you.
The Hebrew word for revelation and the Hebrew word for rain are the same. He causes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. He causes the rain to fall on the weeds and the tomatoes. By the way, those tomatoes, I had one of those yesterday. It brought me back to being a little kid and eating tomatoes in the garden. But it's a... This is why the preaching of the cross, that's what it means. If any man will come after me, let him pick up his cross. That's a summary command. And you can't pick up the cross. That's what it means. You accepted your death. Abandon himself. Second, that's a summary command. And then the follow me is the fruit of that. It's not a command. Because there can be no command to follow him, you can't do it. But if you accept your death and abandon yourself, take no thought, boom, then you're automatic in the way. But if there's no death, then you're just playing religion. Doesn't matter what you call yourself, it doesn't matter, meaningless. It doesn't matter what you call, what your label is.
Yeah, religion is what you do to keep from dying. You buy all the words and say the words to everybody.
And and one of the things that is that's why people like it is this is ceremony. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't even get the one word today, Ronnie. It's all your fault.
Stop the whole Bible.
There's a Buddhist story of a man who wanted to be enlightened, so he went to his guru, and the guru said, well, you're going to have to go live in a cave, and you're going to have to be all by yourself for take a long, long time. It could take 25, 30 years, but if you meditate and if you concentrate, you'll be able to be enlightened, but you'll have to use a special mantra, which I'm going to give to you. Spent 35 years up there, and he never achieved enlightenment. He was starting to get frustrated. It wasn't happening for him. And he was trying. He was meditating every day, 16, 18 hours a day meditation. He found out that the guru was coming near where he was. He found out from some people. So he intercepted him. He said to the guru, man, I'm waiting for enlightenment for 35 years. Said, it hasn't happened yet? No, it hasn't happened yet. He said, well, are you using the mantra? He said, yeah, I'm using it. He said, what did I tell you? I told him what his mantra was, and the guru looked at him and said, that's not right. That's the wrong mantra. You've been up here for 35 years, and you're using the wrong mantra. You're never going to be able to attain enlightenment because you're out of time. You're too old. The guy was just totally devastated. Stumbled back to the cave and he sat there and he got really mad. And he said, this is bullshit. All this time, all this energy I put into this thing, trying to figure it out, and it's just bullshit. And he immediately became enlightened.
I heard the same story a little bit differently as I was smiling. But it is the book of Ecclesiastes. That's the purpose. That's why enlightenment, meaning the marriage supper of the Lamb, can't take place until you understand the emptiness and futility of everything else. Whatsoever is a gain to you is a loss to Christ, without exception, even knowledge about Christ. Anybody else? By the way, There's a whole theory that, you know, Thomas was the evangelist to India, mm-hmm. and that his influence is what influenced Buddhism.
I didn't know
it was
Thomas, and there's some people say Christ was definitely.
No, that's not right.
I know whether it's
but right Thomas was.
Thomas was for a fact.
Yeah, that's where he died. But anyway, that's all right. This was not really a Bible study. This was sort of a BS session. BS and Bible study, the same letters.
Exactly.
Take it, big guy.
Not a lot of difference. That's bullshit.